And welcome in to the Tuesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hope everybody's off to a great start to their Tuesday morning. Joe Rexroad, how are you? What's going on?
Delightful.
Delightful. Nick Keyser, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I learned something new yesterday that I didn't think I'd ever hear come out of someone's mouth. So. Okay. That was fun. I'll share this with you guys. So apparently you can resuscitate somebody to the new song Texas Hold'em, which is very strange. I didn't know that you could do
that.
You're
talking about like CPR?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the other one would be, oh God, I can't remember what it is. But either way, I didn't hear, just anybody with no context said, hey, do you know that you could... give CPR with the Texas Hold'em. I was like, no.
That's good to know, I guess.
Thanks, I guess. Okay, thanks.
Nick Keyser out here trying to save one life at a time.
Exactly. I like it. And Joe, I thought you wouldn't be well off this morning. I don't know how you're doing this so good this morning.
Well, you said two words so far, so I don't know.
what am I doing so good, Nick?
I don't know.
I am sitting here.
You said yesterday you had no idea what was wrong with you.
Okay. Yeah, I still really don't.
Joe, you're still breathing. That's good.
What is your point, Nick? Keyser's, do you have a point?
Keyser's pointing out that you are still alive. That's good to see.
That exactly. Is true. I am breathing.
It's good to see. Oh, boy. Way to go, Nick. That was
the root
nice
of the problem.
Medical informational minute and a half with Nick Keyser. You can keep people alive via CPR due to Beyonce's new song, and that could be your nice rhythm to it. We've learned something new today, thanks to Nick Keyser. We got a lot to get into on the program today. Big game for the Nashville Predators tonight, an opportunity to clinch a playoff berth. So we'll get into that with Alex Doherty at 8 o'clock coming up on the program today. Caroline Fenton will be with us at 7 o'clock, as she is every Tuesday morning. The national title game last night, Joe. UConn makes it official. Back-to-back national titles for them, and pretty clearly the best team all year long in college basketball. Definitely the best team all year long in the tournament. They were dominant the whole way through. They win 75-60 last night against Purdue, and what an accomplishment for that program. Back-to-back national titles. They're 37-3 this year. Played great again last night in the title game, and Hurley getting all sorts of attention from his fan base, from Kentucky's fan base, from everybody, but just what a job done by UConn this year. They were a lot of fun to watch during the tournament.
Yeah, the clear best team. And look for a while like Purdue. I mean, I guess in some ways it kind of mirrored the women's championship game when you have one, you know, dominant player, Big Ten team, and can that dominant player be dominant enough to make up for a pretty clear mismatch in teams? And no. Eventually, no. UConn is, man, it's amazing. They lose five of their top eight scorers from last year's team. And, you know, getting the portal some, too. I mean, Cam Spencer from Rutgers was a heck of an ad for that team. And they have pros, you know, coming back from this team. But he is one heck of a coach. There's no doubt that Danny Hurley. Speaking on that point, I mean, Kyle Tucker – once again, I mean, Charlie Hustle, Kyle Tucker, man, he'll track somebody down. He went out there in Arizona. He tracked down Hurley, and he basically said, no way.
Yeah.
The quote was, no way on Kentucky. So I think that's pretty clear. It's, you know, and the only real argument for Kentucky to get him would be, as you move forward, we know about the SEC and the Big Ten and the football money. Do you know, is there a long view there where it's like, well, you know, maybe down the road that makes a big difference. But I mean, the Hurleys are East Coast all the way, and that program has to be considered a blue blood now.
Well, there's no question about that. And that's now the third coach that I know of that has come out and said publicly that they're not going with Kentucky. I mean, Nate Oates put out a statement yesterday basically saying he's sticking around at Alabama to not pay attention to any of the rumors. Jay Wright said on national TV last night that he's not coming out of retirement to coach Kentucky, and now you've got Danny Hurley saying that as well. So the three of those guys that we talked about a lot yesterday, Joe, and Hurley, Jay Wright, and Jay Wright was to a lesser extent, right, because he's, you know, he's retired, and that felt unlikely the whole time, but Nate Oates as well. We've got three coaches that have already said no to Kentucky. Now, having said that, Joe, look, we've seen coaches say no before, and then all of a sudden they end up at a job, but I don't expect that to happen with any of those three.
Right. Yeah, agree. I mean, the one of those three I thought was actually really possible was Nate Oates. So, if you're Alabama and you're Alabama's money people, you jump all over that situation and say, what can we do to keep you? So, I think Scott Drew, Seth Davis's top candidate from the start has been Scott Drew. And I think that's something that could definitely gain some traction. You know, it's a question for him. It's a question for anybody of, you know, the fishbowl. Like, no matter what coaching job you have, including Danny Hurley at UConn, I mean, do you want that fishbowl? Because that is to me, craziest fan base, which is good and bad. You know, there's pluses and minuses to that. And just the expectations, the pressure, and all that goes with it. Is that, you know, do you want that? Do you want it? Is it worth it? Or, you know, because like Scott Drew's got a great thing going at Baylor. Now, again, you can play the money game there. Like down the road, what does that mean? You know, down the road, being in the SEC, does that make a big difference? Like an NIL and all this stuff. But it's going to be interesting. You know, quick stat that, Robbie, that I heard last night that is one of the most mind-boggling stats on UConn, okay?
Yep.
Since 1999, UConn has missed, basically, it's like 32%, so a third of the NCAA tournament since then.
Okay.
They have won 24% of the tournament since then. Also, they have the same number of conference titles as national titles in that time. Like, they're either – they win the whole freaking thing or, like, they'll be bad.
Yeah.
They'll be bad, miss the turn. Like, they're not a consistent program. They've had three coaches. I mean, Kevin Ollie won a natty there. I was there at the Elite Eight at Madison Square Garden in 2014 with a very average 7-seed UConn team down double digits to Tom Izzo's most talented team in the second half. Shabazz Napier starts hitting all these threes. He just doesn't stop until they win the whole thing. They weren't that good, but they won the whole thing.
Yeah.
Kentucky, it's incredible. Like, they are the most opportunistic. Like, they have fewer Final Fours than several programs during that time too, but they win it every time they go. It's really amazing.
I was thinking about this last night as it was becoming pretty clear that they were going to win. In my lifetime, like as a kid growing up to now, like they're the most successful men's basketball program out there when you just go by championships. Like if you're just going national title, like I was born in 92. They won in 99, 04, 11, 14, 23, 24. I mean, they got six titles during this. They are the most successful men's basketball program by championships during my lifetime, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, exactly. But you still kind of – you don't necessarily think of them that way just because there are a lot of years where they're not even a factor.
Yeah.
You know, now I think now – I mean, we'll see. I mean, you know, things can change. But I think with Danny Hurley and the way he does things, I mean, I do think that we're going to – you know, we may be – first of all, they could win it all next year too. But maybe that consistency – and they did have – they had long – years of consistency with Jim Calhoun when they were really good. They actually couldn't even get to the Final Four, but they were really good. So it's really interesting how that turns out. Another thing about Danny Hurley over the weekend that I thought was one of the most interesting things I heard, and I'm paraphrasing, but you know, he was asked about, like, you know, NIL and all this stuff, and he said basically, like, I coach my players harder because of that. Because I say, hey guys, you're getting paid well for this. So guess what? Like that. So now it's not just your room board scholarship and opportunity. It's also this money. So let's go. And like, that's a really interesting way to look at it. You know, I mean, I hadn't thought, because some people think it's like, ooh, in this day and age, you have to be real, you know, they're going to transfer or whatever. And he's like, hey, man, you're going to bust your butt if you're here because you're getting paid on top of this. I thought that was really interesting.
That's a very interesting approach. Obviously, it appears to be working for him. And look, you know, I think back-to-back national championships, regardless of what sport it is always incredibly impressive. Joe, I think it's more impressive nowadays when you factor in that there is so much roster turnover, there is so much, like, you know, competing money out there from an NIL perspective for talent. Like, the fact that they were able to roll through this and win it again in today's era of basketball, like, I just don't think we're going to see a lot of that moving forward. I don't think we're going to see a ton of, like, back-to-back championships in football, back-to-back championships in basketball. I think we're going to see less and less in that. With just the roster turnover being what it is, I think it's really impressive that he was able to pull this off again, and that program was able to pull this off again.
Yeah, yeah, you would think so. I mean, like in football, you can get one of these, you know, loaded teams with like a great quarterback who's gonna, you know, he's got like a sophomore year, you win it all, and it's like, okay, come back as a junior. I mean, right. I think it's more likely still in football, but yeah, I agree. Like the last time it was done, Florida brought back the entire team.
Right.
And the entire team came back. So
friend of the show, Corey Brewer.
That's right. And the only question was basically like, is Noah or Horford, are they going to the NBA, you know? And when they didn't, there you go. And now it is very different. So I agree. But now the portal, when you're one of those teams, what you can do, because if UConn didn't get in the portal, then they wouldn't have had that team this year, you know?
Sure.
But then again, I think that's true of Purdue. I mean, Cam Jones is a big part of the reason that they made it. They had to add another perimeter option who, by the way, like none of their perimeter players did anything last night. They couldn't even look at a three. I mean, they couldn't even look at a three last night. It was an incredible coaching job by them. But I think you're right. It's going to be more rare. And another thing, the scout for that game was done by Luke Murray, who, I mean, pretty soon, I got to think that Bill Murray's kid is going to be a head coach here,
yeah.
I would think.
I would think so. And I know this, Joe, Tennessee fans, very happy to see Purdue not finish the job last night. Tennessee fans really hate them some Purdue basketball right now.
Yes, they do. I notice that. I Wes Rucker's still whining about Zach Edey. He and I had
that.
A little conversation on Twitter last night, too. They did call him for some fouls, by the way.
They did.
I mean, they called him for some travels, fouls. So,
it's good to
just
see.
Just saying. I mean, the guy had 37, and he looked like he could barely move out there by the second half.
He did. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the national title game from last night. Coming up next, we had Bruce Feldman on the show yesterday. He offered some interesting thoughts on the wide receivers that are projected to go at the top of this draft. And just some interesting takeaways I had from our conversation with him and from his piece at theathletic.com that we discussed yesterday. We'll get into all that. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We had Bruce Feldman from The Athletic on yesterday, and we're going to get to some of his comments that he had on Joe Alt here in just a few minutes because I thought that was really interesting. But Joe, for those who missed it, he came out with a piece at The Athletic that's basically a mock draft, but it's a mock draft where he is talking to sources both in the NFL and in college football that have really been involved with some of these players, that have game planned against some of these players, that have certainly scouted and watched film on these players and basically gotten their perspective on what they bring to the table, their attributes, how they project in the NFL, all those sorts of things. And the receiver part of this, I think, continues to be really interesting because Feldman was talking about it yesterday. I'm reading some of the comments from the coaches on his piece at The Athletic. And whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, or Malik Nabers, the general consensus, Joe, is everybody feels like these guys are going to be elite players in the NFL. Like it's, you know, we all know the accolades that Marvin Harrison has, and they go into good detail at the piece at The Athletic about just how what makes him special and what kind of a pro he could be. You know, I'm looking at comments from a Dunze. about Adunze, and it says, quote, "He's as good as we faced in two decades as a college coach. Unbelievable with the ball in the air, fantastic hands, very good route runner, good size, good competitor. He's as good at tracking the ball as I've ever seen. At 50-50 ball, he had to have been 85% or better on those." Go down to Neighbors. They're talking about his explosiveness. He's elite away from the ball, or elite with the ball in his hands, all those things. Like, it feels like these are three guys, Joe, that any other year unless it was Jamar Chase or whatever the case may be, these guys would probably be the number one receiver in each of these drafts. And now you've got three of them in this draft. And it feels like everybody expects all three of these guys to be absolute studs at the NFL level, which I will say continues to make me, as just an observer wondering what the Titans are going to do in this thing, very intrigued by all three of these options if one of them has to be there at number seven.
Yeah, it's both those three, and then you'll see people. I mean, Bruce brought up Brian Thomas.
Yep.
Talk about even some of the a little bit deeper, like some of the guys who are going to go in the second round, and some years maybe they'd go like 12th. So it is from a receiver perspective, it's a crazy draft, and it is. It's one of those things where it's like, if you got into the situation of a choice, how does that compare to Joe Alt, or your need for a left tackle, your evaluation of him, let's just take him, and your just the quality of the players compare, because yeah. it does seem like a clear top tier where, like you said, any of those guys would be a one in a lot of years, would be the clear best. And, I don't know that that's necessarily true of Alt. I think he's mostly considered OT1, but not across the board. There are some analysts out there who don't have him as OT1, but you're comparing positions and you're still also thinking about need. So it is it's one of those things where if one of them is there for the Titans, is that guy too good to pass up, no matter what else might be looking at them?
Yeah, because think about that. Everybody knows you need a left tackle, and you're going to have to find one somehow, whether that's at number seven overall, which is the most likely route, or later in the draft in the second round. We all know that. You've got to find a left tackle. But if you're Rand Carthon and you're Brian Callahan and you're sifting through the tape here, which they've been doing heading up to the draft process, and you're like, good Lord, Rome Odunze is going to be a 10-year All-Pro in the NFL, and he's somebody that you can build your offense around. Isn't that really intriguing to you, especially if for a guy like Brian Callahan, who's coming from the place he's coming from, knows how valuable those type of wide receivers are? I have to think there's a strong consideration there to take one of those guys. And even if you look at it and you say, you know what, we might have to find our starting left tackle in the second round, and we certainly don't feel as good about that as we would feel with Joe Alt. But when we line up the two players and let's say four quarterbacks go in front of them, you've got one of these receivers and you've got Joe Alt sitting there at number seven, and you feel like Odunze, and I'm just throwing his name out there, it could be Neighbors, could whatever, but Odunze, you feel like, is better than Joe Alt is. I think you got to take him. And that's probably, when you do that, I'm not going to say it's going to be unpopular, Joe, because I think among Titans fans, anytime you take a wide receiver over an offensive lineman, I think there's a natural excitement level that kicks in. I do think if that happens, a lot of people, the first reaction is going to be, well, who in the heck is blocking for Will Levis, which I understand. But
right.
I don't think you can just base your entire decision on, well, we have to have a left tackle, and even though we feel like Rome Odunze is going to be a better player than Joe Alt, we got to take Joe Alt. I don't think that's the way to go.
Yeah. I think it comes down to how close would they be, because need can't just be completely dismissed. And then and it's so many things. It's also then, okay, fine, Odunze is too good. And when it comes down to it, you hope as an NFL team that you don't have too many opportunities in the top 10, in the top seven. You hope you have very few opportunities. But when you do have those opportunities, like, you really do have to say, okay, who's the great player? Like, who is going to be, you know, someone that is most likely to, like, be in Pro Bowls and to be, you know, making a huge difference individually for this team? Who's the best player, you know? So that's that opportunity that you hope is rare. You have to do it. But also, if you're the Titans and you're thinking about preserving your quarterback and giving your young quarterback a chance and everything, you also then have to say, okay, so then what is the – then how does the left tackle get acquired? So who is it, and can we get that guy? That's what you have to say if you're the Titans, you know?
Yeah.
You have to – you can't just – to me, I don't think you can just say, oh, best player, do it. Like, you also have to think, okay, glaring need still unfilled then. Then so how does that glaring need get – can it get filled well enough? Is there someone at 38 or someone maybe you can move up from 38 a bit to get that you actually feel like could also be – a long-term really good answer at left tackle? I mean, that has to be part of the question.
Can Treylon Burks play left tackle? Just put him out there.
Yeah, I've seen him deliver some good blocks, you know.
Yes,
he's got some, good size.
Zach in Nashville on the text line says, I think all these top guys are separated by thin margins on NFL team boards, including Olu and Latham as top guys. People need to understand that draft nerd boards are rarely the same as NFL team boards, which is a good point by our friend Zach in Nashville about football and other efforts.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, so when he says all these guys, he's talking about tackles, I assume, or just guys in general?
I think guys in general.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, sure. I mean, that's the thing, though. I do, and you know, like with the Feldman thing, there's limitations on any of this, right? I mean, first of all, like, there could be a completely unanimous evaluation from every angle you could look at it. People who sit there and watch film all day, coaches, GMs, these college coaches. I love that Feldman gets that angle of it.
Yes.
I think that's a really good, but then there's going to be some unanimous evaluations and they're going to be dead wrong, because whatever the case is, guy, his system doesn't fit, guy, you know, doesn't do what he's supposed to do off the field. I mean, like, you know, we don't know. But it does seem like on the college side of this, that's where it's interesting and it's a little different, is that, you know, according to who he talked to, and again, it's people who saw these players, but it does seem like Alt is put a little bit higher in a pedestal compared to the other tackles than he is in some draft analysts things. And by the way, I put a lot of stock into the Beast and Dane Brugler, and we'll have him on here in the next couple weeks. And that, I think, is coming out tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm really interested to see what he comes up with, because, you know, it's not just him. I mean, it's him doing a ton of work with a lot of people to try to get these evaluations done. But it does seem like from the Feldman thing, there is a little bit of a gap between Alt and the other tackles.
I got a texter that says, do you think this could be the best top of the offensive talent across the board ever for an NFL draft? I don't know. I mean, I have to go back and look through all the drafts. It certainly feels like a pretty good one, though.
That's a very prisoner of the moment-y question. But I will say, like, I mean, I think those two positions in particular does seem ridiculously deep, tackle and receiver. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about, like, you know, quarterback. I think we've had better quarterback years. I understand, like, Caleb Williams. It's funny because now it's like Drake May. Some people think he's going fourth. And some people a year ago was like, ooh, which one will be number one overall? But yeah, it's pretty good, though. It is pretty good.
Got Joe Milton maybe in the fifth or sixth round. Who knows? Could be a really good draft. The offensive talent could be off the board.
Don't forget him. Thank you for remembering.
Just want to, every now and then, got to bring him back up. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the NFL draft, including some interesting comments from Feldman on Joe Alt that we'll get to coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase and Big Joe have your chance to qualify to win a pair of tickets in the Eurostone Club to see Jeff Dunham this Sunday at Bridgestone Arena. This contest brought to you by Green Trees Company, a family-owned cannabis company and dispensary providing high-quality legal THC products for anyone seeking medicine, relief, or wellness, located in Hendersonville and a new location in West Nashville, and available online at greentreescompany.com. Tune in today between 9 and 11 for your chance to qualify to win. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Taking your thoughts on the NFL draft, We had Bruce Feldman from The Athletic on yesterday to offer his perspective on some of these prospects. And one of the things that we're trying to get to the bottom of is Joe Alt clearly the best left tackle in this draft? And if so, how much separation is there from Alt until the next best guy, whether that's a Fashanu, whether that's a Latham, whoever your next best tackle in the draft is, how much separation is there? And we asked Bruce Feldman about that yesterday. Here's what he had to say on our program.
From everything I've gathered, they feel like there is a gap with Joe Alt. Joe Alt checks the most boxes. There's other guys who maybe have bigger weak spots or areas where they have to develop further on either one aspect as a pass protector, as a run blocker. You know, there's been a couple of guys I talked to also faced other guys who were projected in the first round. And when I would ask them about other guys after talking about Joe Alt, they'd be like, are people talking about, you know, blank as a top 15 pick or something? And I was like, well, there's chatter that this guy's going to be a first round pick. He's like, oh, he's a good player. He ain't Joe Alt though.
So that was Feldman on the show yesterday. So according to him, Joe, it sounds like from people he's talked to that there's a pretty significant gap between Joe Alt and some of these other tackles that we've talked about, which is not always necessarily reflected in some of the draft commentary or certainly mock drafts that we've seen.
Yeah, so for anybody who didn't hear that interview, just for background, you know, so basically, you know, I think it's a different number with different players, right? I mean, Bruce has been covering college football for a long time. He has a lot of coaching sources all over the sport, and so he talked to people who face these guys, you know, and which I think is a really good way to go about it. So they game plan, they grinded the film on them, they game plan for them, they determine their weaknesses and strengths, they put scouting reports on them, and then they played them in a game, and they played them in multiple games. So how many, you know, and again, it's probably now a guy like Joe Alt. You know, I mean, if you have some of these guys in the draft, like who are more like, you know, non-power five guys, for example, you probably just, you know, you're going to have less opportunity with something like that. You know, maybe they played one or two power five teams or whatever. Not that he couldn't talk to coaches from other leagues, but, you know, I mean, typically I think if you play in a bigger league or if you're Notre Dame and you play against a lot of really good teams, you know, you have a lot of opportunity for coaches who can weigh in on this, but I think it's just a different perspective than just watching film of someone as a draft analyst.
Yes.
Or even, you know, even really different than like a personnel person watching film, because there is a difference between, okay, how good is this player? How would he fit what we do versus, okay, how do we beat this player? You know? So anyway, I found those comments definitely interesting. And it does, I mean, you just look at everything with him, the athleticism, the size, 6'9", 321, even the, I don't put a ton of stock in this, but, you know, the heritage of his dad was a great tackle in the NFL, basically like been born into like this, you know, life. And there just isn't much that I've seen that's like a knock on him. Whereas like Olu, for example, Fashanu, you know, read the comments on him and Bruce's story, you know, and it's kind of consistent. And even like I heard Trevor Maddox say similar things on Jared's show. It's like the anchoring, the athleticism, all that's there, but the anchoring against like speed to power rushers is a concern. And he struggled with the guy from Ohio State. And it's like, ah, man, like that to me is concerning, because like, talk about athletic traits. I can think of a tackle who has fantastic athletic traits who just got overpowered constantly. His name was Andre Dillard.
Yeah.
He played for the Titans last year. And I'm just saying, like, when I hear the struggles to anchor against, you know, certain types of rushers, man, that concerns me a little bit. Doesn't mean it can't be fixed or whatever, or that it's insurmountable, but like, I just don't see those knocks on Alt from the people who, you know, who have done this to a deep level.
Well, and I think going back to, you know, that when the conversation about Alt versus an Adunze or a Neighbors or one of these receivers, like all that really matters here is how the Titans view it. I mean, if the Titans view Joe Alt as clearly the best player on the board, then okay. I mean, that is what it is. I think what it becomes really interesting is do they view one of these receivers as significantly better than Joe Alt? And if they do, like, how much do they allow the need to creep in? Because I do think another thing you have to consider, like, what happens, Joe, if you view a Neighbors or an Adunze as clearly better than Alt, but you also look at the left tackle part of this and you say, well, the drop-off between Alt and some of these other tackles is massive in your mind. Like, what do you do at that point if you're the Titans? Because, I mean, conventional wisdom would tell you would go with the best available player, but if you also feel like behind that, a position of need at left tackle has a pretty clear drop-off after the top guy, how does that influence your decision if you're Rand Carthon and the Titans?
Right. So Brian Callahan at the Combine says, all things being equal, touchdown makers.
Correct.
Okay. But all things, there's a lot of things that have to be equal. And that has to be, it has to be part of the discussion. You know, you have to come out of this draft. You're the Titans. We've seen what they've done in free agency. They haven't addressed left tackle because they're going to do it in the draft. So, you know, one of the things that you're leaving this draft with is someone that you intend to start at left tackle, I think. I mean, if it doesn't work out for whatever reason, then they can throw Nicholas Petitfrere over there and say that was the plan all along. But I have a hard time buying that. I mean, I think that the plan is to get your left tackle. So it's the gap, but also, Robbie, then it's like, what's – so there's a gap, whatever the gap is, but then also, like, okay, now you're going several names down too.
Right.
There's going to be a run on tackles. So what do you think of Patrick Paul? I mean, that, you know, like – the guys you can get there. And, you know, again, you could always try to move up from 38, get back into the first round or something. But if anything, I think the Titans should be preferring to move down somewhere in this thing and get more picks.
I agree. I mean, you know, Trevor on the text line says, you know, if there happens to be a receiver falls to the Titans at 7 and that's their pick, would it be worth it to them to do what the Texans did last year and then trade up and go get their guy at tackle? So basically trade their second round or what else, get back up in the first round and go get the tackle too. Like, I mean, I guess if you love a guy, then you could do that, but then you're talking about trading away a second round pick. You already don't have a third. Like, to me, if the Titans are going to be trading, it needs to be back and acquiring more picks. I mean, it's going to be a tough sell for me to really move up at any point in this draft of significance. Like, you know, if you want to move up in the sixth round, then knock yourself out. But up high in the draft, it's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, I look, there's always the threat of the Chargers here. And I know there's another, you know, someone from the Chargers was gushing about offensive linemen the other day. So it's
they,
like,
love some offensive linemen out there.
Yeah, they're definitely saying that. Yep. You know, they badly need receivers now. So, but regardless, I mean, you could look at that, try to, what, get ahead of them. I mean, the thing is, ahead of them may be four quarterbacks. So trying to get, like, if we're talking at the top of the draft, trying to get to four, you're competing with someone who wants to get there to draft, you know, QB potentially, if that's what's going to happen with J.J. McCarthy or however that's going to shake out. Yeah, trading up to me is – I mean, look, I understand if it's like there's one player they absolutely have to have and that's just it and it's the key to everything. Well, okay. I mean, you can have all the discussions, but long term, to me, it's like someone on the text line sitting here, like someone on the show said the other day, you have to draft for need and not best. I think that's how you become an average football team, if you just draft for need. I mean, that's how you have a subpar roster. So I disagree with that. I mean, you have to go with the best players you can get, and I think if you're the Titans, you also have to have as many picks as you can possibly have.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the NFL draft coming up next, including a very interesting text on the text line that we'll get to as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans and the NFL Draft, 615-737-1025. Got some tickets to give away, a 4-pack of tickets to the Monster Energy Supercross Championship at Nissan Stadium coming up on Saturday, April the 20th. be caller 3, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Call the 3, we'll win a 4-pack of tickets to the Monster Energy Supercross Championship at Nissan Stadium on Saturday, April 20th. For some reason, I can picture Rex Road driving some motocross, some supercross.
Can you?
I can. I think you.
Okay.
I think it'd be fun.
Give it a try. I used to want a motocross bike.
See? There we go.
Never got it.
Well, we're bringing up bad times from Joe's childhood now. Brad on the text line says, I've heard very little chatter about the S2 cognition scores this year. Is that no longer top of mind with the scouts and teams, or is it just not receiving the publicity for some reason this year with all the parties, media, and teams alike? And Joe, that's an interesting question. I haven't really thought about it. I've not really heard much about that either. So what do you make of the S2 part of this? Because, as you know, that was all the chatter last year with Levis and especially Stroud heading into the draft.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And so basically, here's what to me has happened is the S2 guys, and again, people who don't know, they live here in Nashville. They're former Vanderbilt professors. Remember, this is our private business. And so, you know, these scores have absolutely been to some extent predictive. It's a good test. It's one of many tests that can be effective in evaluating players, especially certain positions like safety, quarterback. Those positions are, I think, more effectively gauged by this. But the CJ Stroud thing last year, which, again, to quickly summarize, there was a bad score that someone wanted to make sure was out there. Okay, I've heard when I was at the combine, I heard what people believe of the team that did this, which was to validate their choice at quarterback, and it's the type of franchise you might expect to do some crap like that. Mm-hmm. But Stroud, if that's true, if they really did. Long story short, it became this huge thing. CJ Stroud, terrible S2 score. Well, first of all, apparently, like, it was like he half took the test and it was the end of a long day or whatever. Took it again. The score was good. But this thing becomes a public thing, right? So remember, this is a private company. These guys contract with certain teams and don't with other teams, right? Now, they have expanded to go with two teams per division now, as opposed to they used to have a rule of just one team per division. They've expanded. But like, it doesn't help them at all for this stuff to be out there like that, and to for the test to be basically torn down the way it was. So it's not like the Wonderlic, which is just a general test that teams would get, like, this is proprietary. So it's going to be interesting moving forward. Like, I think they would rather suppress it, right? Like, they have business, they have these teams paying them to evaluate them, and they're trying to give these teams who pay them an edge with these scores, and the teams who pay them, I think, believe like there's value in this. But then if it's going to get out there, that means all the other teams have access to at least the scores, right? So it's a really interesting situation with S2 and where that's going to go. But again, it's not just like some test at the combine. And then, I mean, this is a private company. And that, you know, they're into like youth sports are probably most effective assessing hitting skills. If you look at correlation to success, cognitive, distraction control. I mean, I could go on and bore the heck out of you. It's probably most effective with in baseball, but it has been effective in football. It's a great point. I was wondering how it was going to go this year. It's been quiet. Because I think they'd rather it stay quiet and keep it to their clients and say, here you go. Here's all this information that you have that the Tennessee Titans don't have, because it's the Colts and I think it's the Colts and the Texans, right? I think in the AFC South. And they tried to partner with the Titans back when John Robinson was GM, and he didn't want to do it.
D. Hayes from Nashville on the text line says, what if only two quarterbacks are taken before the Titans and the three receivers are gone at that point? I mean, you would hope that Joe Alt is still on the board. I have a hard time believing that only two quarterbacks would be gone. I mean, to me, the question is, are there going to be three quarterbacks gone are there going to be four quarterbacks gone? Because I think if you're the Titans, you want the four quarterbacks to be gone. And that would, if things go chalk after that, that would leave you a choice between one of the receivers and Joe Alt, assuming that the Chargers are just blowing smoke and they don't actually intend on taking Joe Alt, which maybe they do. And if that happens, Joe, the four quarterbacks are off the board, Joe Alt is off the board, and I would assume you're going to have your selection between one of Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze at that point if you're the Titans. So could you trade back? Do you take a receiver? There's a lot of different ways that one could go.
Yeah. If that's how it goes, and that may be devastating to the Titans, you know, because they were counting on Alt. But then you have to look at the upside, which is, you, like you said, two-thirds of this amazing trio of receivers are going to be available to you, right? I mean, maybe there's a huge upset, and one of, you know, who the heck is six? I should remember who six is by now, since we're on April 9th. Who's six?
Six is the Giants.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe the Giants just like, nope, we love Odunze, so you can get Marvin Harrison Jr. at seven. I mean, to me, that's, you jump all over that. But like you said, maybe then someone else is like, oh, holy crap, we can get Marv. Okay. Titans, talk to us. That's, yeah, it could get really interesting. Yeah. I mean, again, I'm still a big fan of, if you can get a great player in the draft, there's a finite number of them. So, whoo, boy, be tough to pass that up. But then again, this roster needs a lot of work, and they need more picks.
Skyler on the text line says, I'll literally cry if the Titans don't get Joe Alt at number 7 overall. I may stroke out if they take somebody else overall. If somebody takes him before 7, then that's understandable. Well, we hope that doesn't happen, Skyler. Just take care of yourself.
Out.
Don't cry either. It's all going to be okay. But I understand, like, it does feel like in some ways, Joe, there's a lot of trying to manufacture different scenarios that's going on with the Titans. I'm guilty of that too, because I don't want the draft to just be as boring as, well, there's an offensive lineman there, take him at number 7. But that may ultimately be the smartest way to go, and what the Titans are banking on is for Alt to be there at 7, Alt to be their pick, and then you feel good about left tackle at that point. The Chargers continues to be really interesting, though, because, like you said, I mean, they've got coaches, assistant coaches, hopping up on the podium and talking about offensive linemen and how important the offensive line is and all these different things. And, like, they have gone out of their way to talk about offensive line, offensive tackle, and all those things. And the question is, like, is that truly what they believe, and they're just going to take the best offensive lineman available in the draft? Or are they trying to blow a little bit of smoke here and shift some things around and maybe get some offers in via trade at number 5 overall? Like, do the Chargers, are, with as much as they've talked about offensive line, is that actually the way they're leaning? Or is this just typical pre-draft lip service that we see from a lot of teams?
Yeah, it's a good question. It almost seems ridiculous, doesn't it?
It's like, I mean, they're really going out of their way to talk about the offensive line.
It's like, I mean, it almost feels like if you are intentionally doing this, and again, it's like you see clips on social media. So what's the context of, like, the line of questioning and everything, you know? And I don't know. I mean, it's worth keeping in mind, but it does feel like there's just an awful lot of megaphoning out there about offensive tackles. You know, it's almost like comical, to the point where it's like, if I'm another team, I'm like, okay, so they're definitely not taking a tackle. but we'll see.
I mean, you hear Jim Harbaugh talk about it, you'd think that he would, like, sacrifice Justin Herbert if he could go get a nice left tackle.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He has a left tackle. That's the thing with them, you know?
I know.
So now they need a right tackle. But that also makes me think, you know, they'd probably love, like, maybe moving down,
taking Latham,
right, and getting a Latham or somebody like that. Yeah, exactly, right. So, I mean, look, there's no doubt that Harbaugh, I mean, he just won a national championship in Michigan with, like, more than anything. And McCarthy is really good. Don't get me wrong, and they had a great D, but, like, with a just an overpowering offensive line. I mean, you know, and that's what he built there. And some people question it. Once you finally got a good quarterback in, all of a sudden it all worked, you know, along with just an all-around great team. But it was the centerpiece of that team was the offensive line. So he's not BSing on his, like, his beliefs in football, right? I mean, And even like how much did they run the ball? Think about like the Niners back in the day. Yeah. And obviously it was Colin Kaepernick with the QB run game and the read option stuff. But Gore, I mean, they you know, power football, absolute believer, Bo Schembechler disciple. So that's not BS, but yeah, it does feel a little bit much for them. So I'd be really surprised if they took a guy who I think is a left tackle at five. When they have a left tackle, they need a right tackle.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Caroline Fenton. We'll get her thoughts on the pre-draft process, the buzz for the Titans heading into the draft. More on that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.